हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। यस प्लीज।
Okay, so it's Satkriya Saradipika Gopalbhatta Goswami, page number 14 in my material. It is said in the Vishnu Yamala Samhita, quote, "I worship the original person Govinda, by whose worship all devatas, pitris, rishis, bhutas, and lokapalas, all the planetary deities, Surya, Chandra, Mangala, etc., are worshipped and satisfied. By worship of the Lord, the demigods and forefathers are also become worshipped and satisfied, as indicated by using the word cha. Demons, yakshas, ghostly beings, inferior gods, and all the sages, living entities, the protectors of the directions, Indra, etc., and their associates, the nine planets, the sun, moon, etc., others such as Vainayaka, Sakuni, Putana, Mukha, Mandika, Shura, Revati, Vrinda Revati, Vrida Kogra, Matri Graha, Vala Graha, Vrida Graha, etc., all become satisfied. Such is the primeval Lord whom I adore. Who is that Govinda? The primeval supreme person beyond whom no one exists. No one is equal to him or greater than him. From Srimad Bhagavatam 4:31:14.
Yeah,
Quote.
there again it mentioned that Matri Graha.
Yeah.
Because Mataji was wondering about. So there'll be a planet that's like that. You know, you have your main planets because all the different demigods are there, and 33 million of them. So they're going to represent so many categories on that. I mean, somebody's in charge of your eyelashes, someone's in charge of your earlobe, you know, all these different things. So you may have a planet, like it mentioned there, of the mother's planet, the brother's planet, the son's planet, all these different things, because then it has those potencies and that are working through those planets, right? And then you have the nine main planets where everything is organized together, and then it's directed towards you specifically. You know, so you have all these different things going on. The administration of the universe is quite vast. I mean, 33 million people are managing it. So it's quite a serious program. So all those are just parts of the Lord, like the arms of the Lord, or in the universal form, then there'll be the different parts of the body. So in any case, it's all coming from Krishna. And so coming from Krishna and being, you know, part and parcel of Krishna, therefore, when he's pleased, they'll also be pleased. So there's no need of separate worship. That's the whole point that Gopalbhatta is pointing out. You know, now he's just giving that point. Later, he'll start to get into other details, you know, like how, you know, unless you worship them all, then there'll be offense. You can't worship just Indra or just Shiva or just Durga. You have to worship all 33 million, right? And according to their hierarchy and this and that. And so that's then where the problem comes. So by worshiping Krishna, it's all taken care of. Yes, please.
From Srimad Bhagavatam 4:31:14, quote, "As the trunk and branches are satisfied by watering the root of the tree, and as the life airs are satisfied by offering food to the stomach, all the devatas are worshipped by worship of Achyuta," end quote. By watering the roots of a tree, automatically the trunk, big branches, and the secondary branches with leaves become satisfied and remain green. And by supplying the seven kinds of relishable foods to the stomach, or to the 10 kinds of life airs, prana apana, vyana, udana, samana, naga, kurma, prikara, Devadatta and Dhananjaya, all the senses, and the heart itself becomes satisfied. Similarly, Achyuteja, by worshipping the one who is infallible even after billions and billions of annihilations, who is primeval and eternal, all others become satisfied and worship. This means that simply by properly worshipping the Lord, the infallible Narayana, all the demigods and forefathers become excessively satisfied and worship. Of this, there's no doubt.
Yeah, so he's pointing out, that's nice, there's no doubt. That's just the way it is. Just like when you water the root of a tree, the tree is satisfied. And if you put food in the stomach, then all the different senses and the mechanics of the body become satisfied. So this is the point of science. Science means it is something that goes on. And so now it's just a matter of seeing on what level that we're working at. Now, why is the science there? Why is it consistent? Why do we see patterns? That because there's an original pattern. So from that original pattern, then all the patterns come down in the details. So they'll look in one area and then work on that. But you see in all the branches of knowledge that they're coming from that same principle. And so therefore, then you'll see within each one of them, it's functioning on the same principle. So in physics, they're always looking for that universal principle that holds everything together. And, you know, they always talk about how they found, but they never have, because they don't see it across the board. So only Krishna conscious, the Vaishnava Vedanta philosophy, and in general, and the Gaudiya Vaishnava in specific, hold everything together in the whole cosmos. You know, so therefore then everything is working on those principles. So when you see that by watering the root of the tree becomes satisfied, by putting food in the stomach, then the whole body becomes satisfied. This is because then the Supreme Lord, him being the source of everything expanding from him, you please him, everybody is satisfied. That's where it comes from. So to say, oh, this is sentiment, that's non-scientific. In other words, that complaint that they have is not a complaint of a true scientist. Because a true scientist, they say, if you can't observe it. But the point is you also have to be qualified to observe it. Just like they say, we can observe, let's say, their idea of atoms or molecules. But then they don't use their bare eye, naked eye. They have to use some particular machine that, you know, costs so much money. They have to make arrangements. They have to set up. They have to get all the things. So they have to go through a process to be able to actually use it. And then they get their things. They have to have their data. They have to analyze it. So much time and effort has to be put. And then they come and say, oh, but, you know, we can't see God. But it's like you don't have the instrument. It means that you're not using the instruments to see God. You have to put in the time and effort. You have to use the devotion. You have to use the knowledge that's coming down. You can't just use anything. So the thing is, and if you do, you see. So those who are devotees, they see. And then the others say, oh, I don't see, so therefore it's not there. So therefore we could say is we don't see what you're talking about. Therefore you're a nonsense. You talk about all this and that, but we know you're just saying that so that you look big and you get the prize and you get the status and all that. Otherwise, other than that, your stuff is completely useless. So that's the whole difficulty that comes up is that people are so self-centered that they only see from their own perspective, and it's not according to their perspective. But Krishna's is the perspective that works for all perspectives. So they want the universal science. That's Krishna consciousness. They want the universal social system. That's Krishna consciousness. They want the universal anything, how to put together anything. It's Krishna consciousness. There isn't another solution because it's all coming from Krishna. And if they're scientific, then they would analyze and look for it. Here, we're saying here's something, and then, you know, they don't. But because of their own bias, they'll say, oh, that's useless. So it's just like, it's interesting that in Egypt, there's stuff, you know, Egypt, Turkey, India, there's stuff that's been there that they've come across, you know, 100 years ago or more, or sometimes less. that they all, they put it into a particular category and said everything, you know, goes back to, you know, the last, you know, 4,500 years or something like this and that. And before that, everybody was, you know, savages and stuff. And there was nothing in all that. So, but now the same places, the same things are analyzing again and seeing that it takes it back now 11,500 years. Instead of 4.5, now it's 11.5. And there's stuff that kind of points out it could be even farther back, but they're willing to now talk 11.5 and everybody's cool with that. Nobody's freaking out. You know? So that's the thing. Same evidence, you know, same pyramid, same pathway, same, you know, what is it? Sarcophagus. Nothing's changed. But that's just noticed that, well, hey, you know, they have better machines. They can go farther into it. They can see more. And now then they say, oh, it's different. Well, before, as they would have told you, you're crazy and sentimental if you said anything else. And now they're saying, oh, now it's science. So science means what is subjectively approved by them. And I specifically use the term subjective because it's up to them. Whoever's leading it, whatever's the main guy, he says, and everybody else has to kowtow. You know, so the process is there, but they're unwilling to kowtow to those who are actual authorities who know these things, and it goes back farther. So we have to be very, very, we have to understand that these examples, they're simple examples that we can use, but they're based on the same science. So therefore, this point of Krishna, them being part and parcel of Krishna, pleasing Krishna means pleasing them the same way as that all the different aspects of the tree, by pleasing the root, you please the whole tree, or by pleasing the stomach, you please the whole body, you know, in all the senses. It's the same science. It's the same method. It's the same, observation, the same, premise. It's not different. So it has to be appreciated that when the acharyas take these things back to there, this is the science, because what they're talking about many times has not been observed. You can't observe what they say. Oh, just things came from nothing. It's just chance. Then why do they even talk science? If it's chance, there's no science. You know? So that becomes the point here that he's pointing out this is science. So it's the science of Krishna consciousness, the science of devotional service. Right. So, okay.
Yeah. It's interesting. Okay. Yesterday.
Yes.
Bhaktivigyan Maharaj was reading from Srimad Bhagavatam to the Russian community. Oh. And he's really bold and he chose to read from Brahmar Gita. Okay. And I remember then when we read those pastimes and we had a lot of doubts about the feelings of the residents of Vrindavan, because it starts from parents and then goes, you know, into the gopis when Uddhava comes to Braj.
Yes.
So he was trying to explain. I don't know how people caught it or not, but his idea is that Uddhava came there and he's just observing those, you know, very elevated moods of the gopis in specific. And that instead of us trying to, from our own perspective, to understand what's going on, and we've seen obviously by the questions of the audience that we didn't feel what Uddhava felt, then Maharaja's advice was try to tune yourself into the mood of Uddhava. And then from there, you might catch the glimpse of of the emotions of the residents of Vrindavan. And then, you know, your relationship will start. Otherwise, if we project ourselves, like you were explaining, scientific point of view, you know, social point of view, this point of view or that point of view, so we won't go very far. And, you know, we've seen it again. So that point, I really appreciate. Of course, scientifically, he explained, you know, pratyaksha, paroksha, aparoksha. But even without that, you know, even without terminology, we should try to guiding us, or if we just read Srila Prabhupada's books, whoever, you know, leads the narration, whether it's Narada or, you know, anybody else, we should try to catch their mood and tune in, and then it will be revealed, maybe. But otherwise, if we with the gross senses, under the guidance of our minds, we'll try to enter into the Bhagavatam, then we'll see that, you know, residents of Vrindavan are depressed, they're suffering, and Krishna is gone, and his heart is like a stone, and like that. So that took me back like a few years. And, you know, some realization came.
Okay, very nice. Very nice. Very nice. Because it's a matter of you have parampara, you have to go through the devotees. We know Krishna only through the devotees. We do not know Krishna directly. Because they're with Krishna, they know, and we can connect with them. You know, so we could have the direct interaction, but we actually only know Krishna, see Krishna through them, because Krishna is unlimited. So which aspect are you going to see? Which aspect are you going to appreciate? So then one must see according to these devotees. But what we're saying, seeing through the mood, means what he's revealing. We should see through what he's revealing. But it's not that we take on, when we say mood here, we mean the particular rasa that he's in. That's not what we're talking about, because that you're not going to understand anyway. Because that's going to be, you know, someone on that platform. We appreciate that mood of that surrender, that appreciation, because what's there is, what is he's appreciating is the mood of the Brajabasis and their surrender to Krishna. So we have to appreciate like that. It's not that we take on his mood, and then from his mood, then we're perceiving what he's seeing. That's what the glass is. We don't have to take on the nature of the glass. We see through the glass. But without that window, you can't see. Right? So it's yeah, subtle there, that one has to be very careful that it's not about the particular rasa or this or that. Just like we, you know, Bhishmadev's talking about the gopis, or the ladies of Mathura talking about the gopis, Uddhava's talking about the gopis. So in other words, it's that mood of the Brajbasis, and then especially of the gopis, of that full surrender. That's the thing to catch. Not the detail of the specifics of what's going on, as much as the mood, because the specifics are manifestations of the mood, as is said in the Brahma Samhita, I think the 55th verse, that Yam Kama Krodha Sahaja Pranayadi Piti Vatsalya Moha Guru Gaurava Sevya Bhavai, that the what's manifest comes from their Stai Bhav. So we'll take it, what's the manifest, that's the real thing. No, it's the mood. And that Stai Bhav is always going to be the main aspect, the general aspect we see the Vrajvasis, is going to be that full surrender to Krishna. And any Vaishnava, it's going to be that surrender to Krishna. The Krishna is one's life and soul. He's the ultimate goal. He's, you know, one sees oneself as a servant of the Lord. One serves to please the Lord and, you know, and try to function on that platform of love for Krishna. So that's going to be the general principle of the Vaishnava mood. Then you're going to have the specifics of the Brajabasis, what has that full, pure, unalloyed devotion. In other words, all Vaishnava is going to be the pure devotion. There's going to be the pure, unalloyed devotion. So that aspect is then what we appreciate. That's what we're seeing. But we have to see it from the from our acharya. Also, then one has to be careful that, oh, for Uddhava, then what's the line? How do we connect to him? What's his line? How do we? No, we have our line, and we can appreciate anybody through our line. So as Prabhupada and the acharyas reveal through that, that's how we're seeing Uddhava, through the comments that they're giving there. So the acharyas are giving comments. And so from that, then we see. Then we can start to appreciate. Because the whole point is, if you're connected to Krishna, everything's wonderful. And you have different flavors. You know, it's just like, let us say you have something nice. You come in and, everybody's nice in the house. And so then that niceness is there. And that same niceness stays. It doesn't adjust. There's no variety in it. It's just always the same exact niceness. And so then, you know, after a while, then you think, you know, what's going on here? Why is that? You know, and this and that. So you're trying to get to the bottom of that. What's going on? You know, is there, everybody wants something and that there's some plan. They have a plan and you got to make arrangements for it. Or, you know, what's going on? Why is everybody so nice no matter what? You know, so you're not satisfied with just that niceness, even though one's always saying everyone wants to just be that happy mood. You want to see the different things, the different flavors, the different things like that. So that's what's going on on the spiritual platform. It's that wide range of emotions in its unlimited forms and variations is constantly going on. But because it's centered on Krishna, it's always going to be ecstatic. It's not about the situation and it's not about us. It's that if you're connected to Krishna, whatever the perception, it will be nice. It will be good. One will be happy. That's the whole thing. So does that make sense? So that's the whole point. It will be there. Yes.
Thank you very much, Maharaj.
That good? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because the difficulty when you're talking is that you're going to be taking a particular angle, you know, especially like what you're saying, the questions come up and all that. So you want to answer those questions. So then he'll be saying, let's say like that, take the mood of the, you know, see the mood, appreciate the mood of Uddhava. So that's not meaning that you're going to, therefore, you know, take on his rasa and follow in that footsteps. It means the mood of how he's appreciating Vaishnavas and how he can appreciate who's, that they're senior to him. Now he's the senior most in Dwarka. He's the senior most in Dwarka. So that means, you know, then what's higher than him? Because that means as far as Vaikuntha goes, he's the topmost devotee in all realms. Then you find that no, then above him is the Brajbasis. And you find everyone on all these other levels, they all appreciate the Brajbasis. Because of that full, that total surrender. It's only about Krishna. So that uniqueness. So that's the point to appreciate. You know, Lord Brahma also said he would just like to be born as, you know, somehow blade of grass or a creeper, so that when the gopis and the residents of Vrindavan walked, and that some dust from their feet might get on your head, or they might bump into as a bush, and you might get their blessings. So that aspect is that we see is there. That's the position, is to see that mood. So, you know, one should try to catch, you know, that what element he's trying to say, and don't get distracted by some detail, because otherwise then we can again get ourselves off the path, you know, which seems to be we're more expert at that than actually staying on the path, right? Yes. Anything?
Yeah, I was thinking the same, that somehow by conditioned nature, we tend to pay more attention to details, which are, you know, important, but at a certain stage. But principles always remain. So what you explain, it's very valuable, because even we came across a situation, is that what some preachers trying to say, then others come and try to explain what the other preachers trying to say and not what the audience think they trying to say, because there's a big confusion in that field. And it's like, I think it's really like hilarious, but actually people are confused. So yeah, it takes a lot to build some bond again, and then we can proceed further. But without that, it's just a story or a projection.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, there's the advantage because it is Krishna and it is devotional service to hear. There's always some advantage. One will get benefit. One does get the spiritual benefit. But like you said, the acharyas then recommend that one has to develop that knowledge because that develops the faith. One could say is no, but the faith is not dependent on the knowledge. That is true. But then the point is if you don't have faith, then you should be cultivating the knowledge as given by the acharyas. So therefore, you can't say that the person says this is confusing, I don't understand it, and it creates so many doubts. So then, you should learn the proper understanding and knowledge. No, I'll just have that feeling in my heart and that. But the problem is by studying these technical points, the feeling in the heart becomes disturbed. And so how are you going to use that feeling to cross over that simply by that faith? Because one has to have that faith, but then the acharyas, that's why they spend time. Krishna spends time, as the devotees spend time trying to explain about Krishna and his name, form, qualities, and pastimes. And then in that way, because that the thing is, people want to know what's the higher thing, but without the qualification for that. So then it just creates doubts. So that's why, yes, you can deal with different things. But then the point is it should be within the context of your qualification, and then you're able, then it works very nicely, right? It's just like if a third grader tries to look at quantum physics, he'll feel like an idiot, right? But we see is that the acharyas, they'll take these highest principles, and because they're discussing the principles, it's something that you can explain to a third grader. And they can catch. And then the details, the examples will give given in details that apply to the third grader. Then as they mature and they're in sixth grade, now you can give sixth grade examples. And when they're in ninth grade examples, 12th grade, 12th grade examples. Undergraduate, those examples. Postgraduate, those examples. And, you can keep going up. But the point is the principle remains, as Jagadish Prabhu was pointing out. And so that's an important element, is that one has to have a consistency, is that one's always hearing from the same kind of perspective. You're getting various different angles of vision, that's vichar, but different angles of vision doesn't mean different methods of vision. It means we have, pratyaksha, anuman, and shabda, and it's based on shabda, and that shabda has to come from the acharyas. Then only you can apply anuman and pratyaksha. So if anybody's talking about the inductive method, these modern academic methods, the scientific methods like that, or they're talking about, administrative or managerial or corporate or social, justice and these kind of things. These have nothing to do with our perspective. Our perspective can include those, but if you put them on their own, they're not our perspective. Point is, it's not because I can think it, therefore it is. Right? That's the point. I think, therefore I am. Yes, you exist, but what you think about may not be about existence. You have to understand whatever you're thinking about, that is Krishna's expanded essence. It's showing his existence. So one has to be very careful that just because you can think, therefore you think that it's good. It has to be according to the acharyas, and the approach to the acharyas is through the founder acharya. So if it's not in line with Prabhupada's teachings, even you're quoting from the acharyas, you haven't understood. So you're seeing there's see through Uddhava's, but you have to see through what's Prabhupada's. What does Prabhupada say in the Krishna book? Right? That's the whole point, is that if you really want to get a proper understanding of that whole Brahmar Gita and all that, what did Prabhupada explain in the Krishna book? So it's an oversight, and that when they translate the Srimad Bhagavatam, that they're using their own translation rather than using Prabhupada's that he gave in the Krishna book. Since there's the idea is, oh, he didn't do everything. The point is, you know, you can fill in those places if there are such things, but generally speaking, there's not. He's given the whole thing. It's just, it's a summary simply means it's without all the Sanskrit and all those things. And then you see it's very nicely explained. Then you get more of an angle. Like that. And then you can support that with the acharyas and other things like that. Yes? Then it comes out good. So that's the difficulty. So Maharaj will be talking about this aspect from the Sambandha Gyan and that, but who talks about Sambandha Gyan? You know, within the scholarly community, how many people are using this understanding of Sambandha Videya Prayojan? Very few. And from that, then, since you have to use something to organize the way you think, you're going to make up your own process. How you identify yourself, what you value, what is the process, what is the goal? You know, just like I am a Westerner. Okay, that's my identity. And then as a Westerner, therefore then, you know, all the externals of the Vedic culture, we don't have to even consider because we're Westerners, right? So, and therefore then, you know, our approach is view everything from the Western value system and looking at that, then we can pick and choose if there are any details in the Vedic system we like. And if not, we'll use our own, because we have plenty of examples of, you know, Christians and Jews and Muslims who, you know, and Buddhists, you know, because we somehow or another, if we take Easter, we're okay with Buddhists because it's not Vedic, right? It's against the Vedic literatures. And so then we can take, you know, anything but India and anything but the Vedic literature and call that as, you know, we're Western. And then the goal is, of course, to become Krishna conscious, but then at the same time as we can't disturb, you know, our position. You know, as Krishna said in the Gita, don't disturb the minds of the ignorant, but they're not going to accept that they're ignorant. Therefore, that's why they're using it this way. And so those who are senior should not disturb them, but they're ignorant, and therefore they consider that their position is actually as good, if not better, than using the Vedic system. So this kind of approach without using the proper Sambandha Abhideya and Prayojana, will it be a disaster for people's Krishna consciousness? And as we see, is then it creates all kinds of in-house fighting and all that. And this is just in the beginning of it. Give it a few hundred years, and then we see, like the Christians. Christians were Jews. Then Paul makes it, you don't have to be Jews. And then, you know, it's based because of his attachment to the Western culture. You know, I mean, in Europe, then, you know, Jerusalem is East and Italy is West. You know, the Roman Empire is West. They don't know about anything past that. So that's as West as you get. So he was attached to the Western values with a little Eastern thing, but not the Judea, going beyond that to the Greeks. You know, you got to leave that, go to the Greeks. You know, their, you know, analytical and intellectual things, that was appreciated because that matches in with other mundane stuff. And so then you do that. And then, you know, at the time, then, okay, then they're working together. They have differences of opinion. But give it a few hundred years, then those who are followers of Paul were making it their business to find and, you know, if possible, kill, if not at least expel anybody who was still Jewish. Even though, factually, if you look at it, no ifs, ands, or buts, Christians are actually Jews. They just don't follow the Jewish religion. That's actually the position. But they've shown throughout history they hate Jews. From Paul taking it away from the culture. The Prophet said this is a cultural revolution. And so then if you leave out the culture, then it's not going to work out good. So that's why then you have to stay on those principles. And if you accept the principles, then you'll see is that the mechanics work very nicely. Here is that you see in the laws of nature, you see it always works like that. Whatever is the particular kind of life, there is some place where everything has food, and that food goes to a particular place. You know, a particular organ, a particular spot on the body, whatever it is, internal, external, something. And from that, then the whole rest of the body gets taken care of, whether it's plant life, whether it's, you know, whether it's an amoeba, whether it's a fish or a bird, or it doesn't matter. It's all the same. And that's how it works. And if you don't use that way, it doesn't work. That's science. So that's the way it is with everything. So why wouldn't it be this way? So why is it like that? Because everything's coming from God. So therefore, if you satisfy God, everything will be pleased. He is the root, because he is, everything's coming from him. That's science. So as soon as you get to that and bring up God, it's because of their atheist nature, they oppose it. So that's subjective. They're atheistic, so that they apply that. That's subjective. If they're real scientists, they go, okay. So if there is, they'd be neutral. Then, you know, a possibility is God, because at least 50% there could be God. But they don't even give, you know, 1%, 0.5%, no percent. So they're not scientists. They call themselves. They're in particular area scientists, but outside that area, they're actually no way, shape, or form a scientist. They're not. You know, so that's the thing, is you can't apply their things somewhere else because it's not universal. Like if I take the principles of chemistry and apply it on physics, it doesn't necessarily work, or the, you know, like this. And so the point is that Christian consciousness is the only science that it can work and it be applied in every discipline. Every discipline it can be used. And so because of that, then it becomes, we see it's the supreme science. So as long as you're sticking to what the Parampara says, then that's that you're presenting the proper science. And all these other approaches, they're very weak. The inductive method for Krishna consciousness is, weak is not even a good term. It's even sometimes opposed. If you're working under someone who is seeing in the proper way, then they can guide you so that you get past it, get over it. But to cultivate it and think that it is the supreme thing, you know, because you know the academic method, therefore you can understand everything. That is one of the most major fallacies that any devotee could have. It's one of the biggest stumbling blocks they'll have on their path to Krishna consciousness. So anything that you put in front of Krishna consciousness, that is where you trip. Oh, without money, we can't do anything. Without management, we can't do anything. Oh, without social justice, we can't do anything. You know, without, you know, this, that. No, it's without Krishna consciousness, you can't do anything. So that's the whole point that one's trying to get to. And so here, then Gopal Bhatta's taking one through the steps that he was following the Vedic culture. So karma, jnana, and upasana. That you have to put all that has to be seen in the context of worshiping of Vishnu, takes care of all the needs of karma, all the needs of jnana, and all the needs of upasana. Yes? We're good? It's okay?
Yes, thank you. Thank you very much, Maharaj.
Okay.
So we continue?
Yes, please.
One second. Okay. So the next shloka is Uttara Gita from Mahabharata, Bhishma Parva. It states, I am to be worshipped by the devatas and the human beings of the Varnashram system. Without doubt, by worship of me, all worship is accomplished. Arjuna, if I'm worshipped, there's no doubt that all the demigods are worshipped. The word Adi in the phrase Deva Adi is used here to indicate the sages, forefathers, demons, as well as the 33 million demigods. I'm the only worshipable object of all the Varanas, Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, Shudra. Adi here indicates the ashramas, Brahmacharis, Grihastas, Vanaprastas, and Sannyasis. Cha indicates even the Varna Shankaras and Chandalas. In the Rig Veda,
interesting here is that you have the Adi Cha. So Adi, the Adi Cha, is whatever's, you know, on the Vedic side, and the Cha is whatever's not. Because sometimes it's just the Adi includes everything or the Cha includes everything. But here he's you know, differentiating it so that you understand it's everything. So the Adi, because you might think Cha, okay, it only means these. But he's used Adi and Cha. And so that way, you know, anything inside and outside the Varanashram system, it's meant for them. Because you saw in the very beginning, he mentioned for those devotees, whether they're within the Varanashram or outside, all the samskars and worship of Vishnu is meant for them. Please.
Yeah, this is interesting. In the Rig Veda, Krishna Upanishad, it is said, Vai means certainly. The meaning of Krishna was previously explained. Sat means pure existence. Chit means absolute knowledge. And Ananda means having beauty, which is indescribably blissful. These are his qualities. He is made of Gana, these qualities. He has a beautiful form, the color of a monsoon cloud, because he is the original person, Adipurusha, to whom there is no one superior. He is called the Supreme Person, Purushottama. The Bhagavad Gita explains this Purushottama as follows. Because I am superior to the Kshara, living entities, and Akshara, living entities, I am famous as the Supreme Person in the Vedas and in the worlds. Because the universe composed of all bodies from Brahma to the Indragopa germ is temporary, I, being eternal, indestructible, am superior to all this, eternally situated in my abode. In the same way, I am superior to the avatars such as Virat, my indescribable portions who exist after the destruction of the universe. I am the source of all avatars, superior to all of them. The above is in reference to the Lord in his manifested pastimes. But the word Cha indicates the Lord in unmanifested pastimes as well. I have another form superior to that, which is you, Arjuna, see on the chariot. It is the reservoir of all happiness, full of constantly increasing taste. Because I'm pure sattva, I'm eternally situated in that blissful form. That form is known only by those devotees fixed on that blissful form and not by others. Therefore, it is said that in 14 worlds and in the Vedas, Mahabharata, Puranas, Upapuranas, Agamas, Ramayana, Dharmashastras, Vedanta and other scriptures, that other than myself, no one is the deliverer from the bondage of this world. Therefore, I am known by the surrendered souls as the Supreme Person. My faithful devotees are blissful internally and externally just by hearing my name, such as Govinda, Narayana, Vasudeva, Mukunda, Ananta, and Achyuta. I alone am the supreme worshipable person. Therefore, Sri Krishna is the Karmadi Mulam, or the cause of all work. Ha-u refers to such words that are sung in the Vedas. All works, including Nitya, Naimitika, and Kamya, have already been explained previously. Adi, refers to the essence of all activities such as worship of Ganesha and other demigods and secondary devas. Worship of the forefathers and austerities, penance, sacrifice, homas, charity, vows, etc. There's no doubt that by the worship of Krishna, one receives the full benefit of all these works.
That's also there, as you see, you get the benefit of all those works. It's not even that you don't have to do those to get Krishna, but whatever's the benefit of them, you're getting. That also should be understood, is that, okay, as a process, a devotional process to attain the supreme, you follow the devotional path and you don't follow any other path, no karma, no jnana, no yoga, you know, and so, or upasana like this, as they're giving here. And so then I just stick to what's the path of pure devotion as laid out by the acharyas. But sometimes when we see is that the devotees, you know, we're talking, well, I have to be practical and this and that. But no, by devotional service, also all the benefits of karma, the path of karma, jnana, and upasana, and yoga are already contained within bhakti. So it's not only that you'll progress on the path to Krishna only through bhakti, but you'll get the benefits of the others through bhakti, because the others only work if bhakti's there. So therefore, if bhakti is the working principle, why wouldn't bhakti be able to deliver that? It's independent. So it's not dependent upon karma to deliver it or jnana to deliver it. That's the thing. Karma has to work through the rules and is dependent on the rules and is also dependent upon bhakti to give the potency that it can give those results. Right? But then here we see is that bhakti, bhakti itself is it's the independent element. Karma is dependent. Jnana is dependent. Yoga is dependent. Upasana is that. They're all dependent on bhakti. So all these other asks, you know, varnashram, you know, the study, the charity, dependence, all those are all dependent. They're not independent. So that's the whole point. Is secondary is always dependent. Primary is the independent. And that's only bhakti. And so therefore, since it gives the results to all others, we can understand as all others are simply reflections of bhakti without bhakti in it. Without the bhakti, meaning without that prema for Krishna. That's why also you see when they get into fine points, the acharyas make a distinction between prema and bhakti. Bhakti is what you're following to get to prema. Once you get the prema, it's not called bhakti, it's called prema. Right? Because then you're situated in your eternal position. So that bhakti is the process, so it can have a mood, it has all the things that go along with it. But then the prema, it drives itself. So bhakti being simply that form of that brings us to that platform. So then it is independent, like the Lord. You know, and so when it can bring us there. And so the material world being a reflection of the spiritual world, then karma, jnana, and yoga are simply reflections of what goes on in the spiritual world as bhakti. But because bhakti means it's about pleasing the Supreme Lord and acting only for the Lord's pleasure without desire for results for yourself, then on the material platform, it's not like that. You're doing something for your own benefit. That's why we've come here. I want to be the controller and enjoyer. And so then that reflection means you're seeing bhakti without the actual heart of what it is, what actually drives it. So then, therefore, when you take those particular details, it's called karma. This particular detail is called jnana. This is called yoga, right? This is called varnashram. This is called this. This is called that. But in actuality, it's all just bhakti, the reflection of bhakti. So therefore, bhakti is the original. Therefore, it can give everything because it is where all these others are reflected from. It's not that there are all these paths, all paths lead to Krishna. No, only one path, and that path includes everything. But unless it is in the, it has to be bhakti. It's not that you can just say whatever you like and say it's bhakti. That's the point. So therefore we have to see is the principle, you know, the principle is given by the acharyas, the process, you know, how to apply that's given, what details, what situations, what are the qualifications of the individual, all that's given by the acharyas, Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. So following that, then we can say that we're nicely on the path. We make up something ourselves. Yes, it does have, it is part of the reflection, but the point is then it becomes perverted reflection. It means that you've adjusted it from what it's actually for. How Mother Jashoda uses it in the spiritual world, you're using it in a different way for your own purpose. So therefore, it's not taking on that aspect of bhakti. It won't give that bhakti. But when you try to follow in the footsteps of the acharyas, and as best as possible, sincerely try to follow what they're saying, even when doesn't have great realization of it, but one has that faith in it, then by following, you'll move forward in that devotional path and move towards what is there in the original. Because you're working with the original. You're working under the protection of the original. Or the other, you're working under the protection of material energy. So we'll say, it's all these paths and I'm choosing. No, you can choose. Do you want to work under Mahamaya or under Yogamaya? That's the choice. Right? We take it, if I can do something, I can pick this up, you know, so therefore I'm a doer. I'm independent. I want to pick it up now. I don't want to pick it up now. I want to pick it up again. I want to drop it. I want to drop it this way. Now I want to turn it over and turn it this way. Now I'm going to drop it. Oh, and it flipped itself. It's the kind of own independence. So these kind of things is that, but the point is under which authority are you doing that? Is it for Krishna? Then you're under Yogamaya. It's not for Krishna. It's just for you because you feel like it. Then it's Mahamaya. So that's the thing we can choose. So this whole idea of independence is not even being looked at properly, is that it's a matter of, I want to do what I want, when I want, how I want, you know, where I want, why I want. But that's Mahamaya. So yeah, you appear to be independent and she facilitates. But now you could be doing whatever it is and doing it to sincerely please the Krishna through the instructions of the acharyas, now doing those same things. Now that is under the protection of the internal potency. So mechanics is not the definition, as we were in the very beginning, we were discussing, is that the details will be looked at. And so those details, that's then where we're missing the point, because we're looking at the details without the principle. If you have the principle and look at details, that's more advanced. You just understand the principle, that's advanced. You can apply that principle through so many details that are there in your life, that's more advanced position. But to look at only the details without the principle, that's not advanced at all. You memorize more things, great. A parrot knows so much, but it doesn't mean they understand what they're talking about. Does that make some sense?
Yes, thank you very much, Mark.
How are we doing on time? Okay, we have another minute. Yeah, so it's very important, as the acharyas are pointing out, is that one has to see all these things from bhakti, because bhakti is the complete path. That gives whatever you're looking for, it's in bhakti. But it has to be connected with Krishna, because only if you're worshiping Krishna, then you're getting all the benefit. If you're not, you're worshiping a particular devata or this or a particular path, or you're worshiping, you know, money, or worshiping position, fame, distinction, adoration, profit, then without that worship, it doesn't have any real meaning. It's always temporary. And it will just be according to what is your adhikara in these areas. You know? Does that make sense? You know, would you have been a big guy in the material platform? Because you see so many, I've seen, I don't know about now, because, you know, it's not necessarily as high, but I remember before you have all these high-flying devotees that are very senior and does so many amazing things. And they make the mistake to think, you know, that things aren't going well for me. People are giving problems. I'll just step out of the society and I'll be all go out in the same, all go out and function outside in the same way. But as soon as they go out, they drop down to whatever is, would be just what they would function at if they weren't a devotee. So like that, one has to understand it's no, it's two different spheres within Krishna consciousness. All the facilities are there, but it's not yours. As soon as you try to enjoy it, you drop out. As soon as you just use it in Krishna's service, then it's all nice. And it's just like the servant in the rich man's house. He's having nice clothes, good food, nice, you know, big house, nice windows, open high ceilings, wonderful furniture and everything. And all that stuff is all there, but it's not his. And as soon as he wants to enjoy it on his own, it's not, but he's there. He's moving around. He's doing all the things according to his nature. And so it's a nicer value. You can say, oh, but why can't I enjoy it and all this and that? Because it's not yours. And says, so well, I don't want to be part of this. So then where are you going to end up? You know, working at some diner someplace with that greasy guy, you know, with the big fat stomach sticking out and, you know, his back of his pants, you can see his underwear and, you know, he's dirty and smelly and, you know, and telling you to go serve those truck drivers outside and, you know, stuff like that. And so, yeah, so the point is then, you know, it just goes. You're in that environment. You enjoy on the same platform as the king, but you're not, but you can't say it's mine. No, it's the king. That's the thing. Then in that, you're in the most wonderful environment. You know, and it's only because we are in the illusion that, no, if it's mine, then I'll enjoy. Then we have a problem. When we understand it's not ours, it's Krishna's, and we use in service to Krishna, that's when we actually, you know, because we just want to serve. That's our nature. Okay? We're good?
Yes, thank you. Thank you very much.
Okay. Om Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai.